Welcome to A Kilometer in My Shoes, stories and perspectives from the youth at 360 Kids. I'm your host, T. Nugent from Shadowpath Theater. Over the past few months, Shadowpath has been hosting open mic nights at the 360 Kids Youth Hub in Richmond Hill. 360 Kids is a not-for-profit youth serving agency in the York region with a drop-in center for youth who are homeless and or at risk of homelessness. The talent at these open mic nights has blown us away. We've listened to original poems and stories. We've seen singers, dancers, rappers, beatboxers, spoken word poets, and stand-up comics. The energy and enthusiasm these youth bring to the mic is so awesome. I can't wait to share it with you. Joining us today to share their story is Jessie. The first time I heard Jessie sing, my jaw dropped. They sang some covers as well as original pieces. Jessie is 18 years old. They paint, dabble in concept art. They write their own music and have two poetry books online. Well, welcome. I've been really looking forward to chatting with you. Can you tell us a bit about yourself to start off?
I am a 18-year-old non-binary homeless youth in Richmond Hill, making music, making art, doing my own thing. I just made a song that we're going to explore today.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. Yeah. What kind of art do you dabble into?
I actually do basically everything in the arts except dancing. I do drawing. I do painting. I've got two poetry books online.
And you said that you're homeless in Richmond Hill?
Yeah, I am. I have no actual residence of living right now.
That's such a crazy experience for an 18-year-old. Could you talk about how you got to that point?
I'm homeless because I have an abusive mother. I have mental health issues. I'm diagnosed with otherwise specified dissociative disorder, PTSD, borderline personality disorder, and depression. And most of those disorders I inherit from my mom. So my mom is just basically 10 times worse. It really sucks how it worked out, too, because the day that I left my parents' house, actually, I wasn't even going to be homeless. I had a boyfriend at the time, and I was going to stay with him because he had a place. And so I left my parents' house that night, and I went to my boyfriend's house. And, I ended up being assaulted by a person there. Yeah, so I had to leave, and it's like, at that point, I don't have my parents' house. Now I don't have my boyfriend's house. Where do I go, you know? And that's the tough thing that you learn a lot, I find, sexual assault. A lot of people that go through sexual assault, very often, they're the ones who have to kind of take care of themselves. So you're the one who has to deal with your shame and your pain and all that. It really teaches you a lesson about how your biggest keeper will be yourself in life. Not to say that you can't depend on other people. You know, you should always go and ask for help and ask for support. But in the end, you really have to depend on yourself the most.
Was your dad at home as well with your mom?
Yeah, my parents are married. My parents are still together. That's the weird thing, you know, is that in my family dynamic, only one of my parents is, like, actually abusive. Mom has done so many things. Oh, my God. This one time, I was 12, and it was near my birthday. And I used to self-harm. I used to cut myself. And one day, my mom found me. She was like, "You want pain? I'll give you pain." And she beat me with a belt on my scars. Like, on my fresh scars. And then after she was done, I was there crying on the couch. And she's sitting next to me. She's like, "You don't even deserve a gift for your birthday for what you've done." You know? And I'm just there like 12-year-old kid. I'm like, how is this normal? How is this healthy? It's not. And my dad never did anything about it. You know, my dad never stood up for me.
Yeah, I think we grow up with this stigma that your family will always protect you and your family will always be there for you. Yet sometimes they do the worst harm.
Yeah, because ultimately when you think about it, what my mom was teaching me as a child was that her love was conditional. So Anytime that she was happy with me and that she got what she wanted, she would give me love. But anytime that she wasn't, that I didn't fit her idea of, you know, a good child, then she would take away that love. And so growing up, believing that your mother's love is conditional kind of messes with your entire concept of love. Because it's like, if your mother won't love you, then who actually will? What people have to realize is that when you constantly seek love and approval and pride from other people, it's really inconsistent. Because your definition of love and pride and accomplishment is different from another person's. So the only true stable pride and love that you will ever receive is really from yourself.
And did you feel really lonely living with your parents?
To me, growing up, home literally meant hell. So like I'm telling you, like I would walk home back from elementary school and I would just stop like steps from my house and just cry. Because I didn't want to go in. I didn't want to go inside my house. Yeah, it felt really lonely. And what feels really lonely too is the fact that you can't really relate with other kids. And I found that a lot with a lot of people who have abusive parents is that you don't realize the privilege you have to, you know, have parents to talk to and to support you until you actually don't have that. Like, I know so many people here that they wish, you know, they had their mom or their dad to be able to call anytime they've got an issue to be able to talk to.
And do you think your PTSD stems from the childhood trauma at home?
My PTSD stems from a lot of things. It started with the trauma at home, and it just got worse with several of the traumatic events in my life. But my entire life has been traumatic. I've been sexually assaulted by 5 different people. I think the PTSD really stems from all the people in my life that have made me feel like I deserve less, you know? And like I deserve to be controlled or to be made to feel as little as possible. Because that's an idea that I've had in my mind for a very long time, you know, that as soon as I make a mistake, you know, as soon as I do something, that's it, you know, I deserve to be punished, I deserve the worst, I'm a terrible person.
What do you do to get yourself out of that that thought that you're not worthy or that you deserve to be controlled or punished or...
So see, it's really interesting. I was actually... talking about this with my counselor. I see this counselor here, super nice. Her name is May. So basically, when you've got PTSD, your body learns to make itself as little as possible and as unnoticeable as possible, because that's what you had to do to survive in your traumatic events. So, you know, like if someone is abusing you, yelling at you, what do? You don't yell back because you're probably just going to get like hit. So you got to stay as little as possible, you know? And so when you're not in that trauma mode anymore, when you're in the future, your body still feels stuck in that. And every time that you get like a flashback or like something reminds you of the past, then your body goes back into that exact same feeling. And so every time that you feel like you're going back to those past times, you have to make sure that you take yourself out so that you make sure that your body is not stuck in this little box anymore. My hands extended, that is literally the space I am entitled to in this universe.
That was amazing. I'm sure a lot of people needed to hear that about taking up space. So how did you find 360 Kids?
I actually found out about 360 Kids with the hospital. So I was hospitalized in January or February for suicidal ideation, and it kept me in there for like a week. And I went to like my first shelter, and the shelter's like, yo, you gotta go to 360. And I'm still there like, nah, I don't want to go to 360. And at a certain point, you know, I'm at another shelter, my discharge date is coming up, and they're like, you gotta get out of here. I'm like, fine, I'll go to 360. I came to check this place out but mostly because of the counseling. That's why I remember. So I wanted to get some counseling, and I came here for that because of the drop-in counseling every Monday. Yeah, I thought that was dope. And I came here, and I don't know, I made some friends, and I just stayed here.
So you came here, and how did? So you're now a resident here?
I used to be a resident here. I used to live at the shelter here, and I got discharged, and I live with my boyfriend. It was good, and it was bad, you know? Like, the services that they offer here are really good. It's just that you got to know how to properly use them. So, you know, a lot of kids in here, for example, Base for Success. It's this program where you do 4 weeks of classes, and they pay you about $400 a week to be in class. And then you work with an employment facilitator to find you a job and like that. And a lot of kids, they come here, they do Base for Success just for the money. And then when it comes to actually finding a job, they don't actually make any effort. So there's a lot of people here who are not trying to move forward. And you can't let that influence you. You know, you can't let that take over you. You got to keep focused on your own goal going forward.
What's your experience with this place, with 360 Kids?
It's really helped. First, you know, with the counseling. And then the shelter. It was nice to, like, have a bed to actually sleep in. And food, they have free food here every time. Like, every day. You know, what other building can you name that offers 2 free meals a day? And music studio, oh my God. I worked at the music studio here to complete my song, you know, so that's another thing that helped a lot. They've had a lot of art programs here, just so many resources. But, you know, I've made some bad friends here who gotten me into doing bad things, like drugs. But when you sober up, your issues are still there. So it's like, ultimately, we're just here, you know, doing anything we can to make our lives bearable for a little bit longer. But it's not progress.
You're saying that you need to focus on your goals.
Yeah.
And not let the distractions get in the way. So what kind of goals do you have set for yourself?
Learn better coping skills. Learn to be healthy. So basically staying healthy, staying stable, and doing good things for myself, like making music, making art, and just taking care of myself. You know, that's my main goal right now, getting better, because it's time.
Those are really great goals. Even as adults, you find that you are go, 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 and you're not taking care of yourself. So it's such a good lesson that you're learning at a young age.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing I learned here too, you know, from the staff here. Because it was when I was getting discharged, and I was like, stressing out so much. So I was like, what am I going to do? You know, where am I going to end up? I have all these things to do. The staff is just there like, you got to take it one thing at a time, or else you won't be able to actually focus on the thing, you know? Because when you constantly try to like plan ahead and, you know, tell yourself, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to take care of this, I got to take care of that, you're not actually focusing on a task at hand.
I love that you're taking care of yourself. That's beautiful. You know the saying, when you get on an airplane and the oxygen masks fall down, you have to put yours on first. Otherwise, you'll pass out trying to put on the person beside you, right? And then you can't take care of anyone.
Yeah.
So you got to take care of yourself first.
Yeah, see, and I was talking about that with one of the staff here the other day, but like healthy relationships. That's the thing. When you get in a relationship, you need to have a stable sense of self. Because if you get in a relationship and you don't have, you know, a stable sense of self, or you don't love yourself as much, then you don't actually know what you deserve and what you don't. You haven't figured it out yet.
That's well spoken. I love that. I wanted to ask you if you had any advice for kids who have had similar experiences as yours.
I would say that the most important thing you have to remember is that it has to get better. It has to change. It is impossible that things will remain the way they are. That's not how life works. The universe is constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly expanding. Your situation can't remain the same. After being assaulted by, you know, three people, I was like, I can't do this. You know, like this hurts, man. This is too much pain. Like, if it happens again, I'm just gonna, you know, commit suicide. Like, I'm not gonna do this. I'm not gonna go through it. And it happened again. And I was like, this is completely ridiculous. This should not be happening. Like, how can I still keep on going with life? You know? And then life was like, joke's on you. And it happened again. And at that point, I was like, yeah, you don't get what you want in life. You don't. No matter how hard you wish that a broken heart was deadly, it's not. That's the thing. We as humans are very strong, very resilient. We are made to survive. Everything in your body right now is working to keep you alive. So no matter what happens in life, no matter what trauma, no matter how much you think that you're hurting, you're still going to survive. So it's either that you make the best out of it or you just let your life go to waste.
That's great advice. What kind of poetry do you write?
I write some really taboo poetry. There's a lot of things in life that we consider taboo, like, you know, sex and mental illness and assault and all those things, you know? So we don't talk about it. As a sexual assault survivor, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to have to keep it in, not be able to talk about it. And you ask yourself at one point, like, why is it? Why is it that I can't talk about it? Because I'm here and I'm in pain. I'm in a lot of pain. So why should I hide this? That's why I make it a mission so that, you know, my art does not, you know, censor itself or avoid any topic. You know, it'll just talk about anything. So I talk a lot in my poetry about love and sex and, you know, sexual assault and being suicidal. But there's some good ones too. There's some happy ones because it's inspirational a lot too. Like this one, let me think if I can remember. It's called Beautiful, and it goes like, don't ever mistake her tears for weakness. She's bravery embodied, an angel with a sword. She could tear down this entire world and rebuild it in her image.
Do you find that writing this poetry helps heal you?
Yeah, it really does, to be honest, because it feels like I'm putting words to my emotions. So it's kind of like taking your pain and taking these intense feelings and turning them into art, into beauty.
And you feel like it's helped you through difficult times as well?
Yeah. I actually very often write poetry when I'm super down, you know, and I'm not doing well. It was my main way to, like, take my emotions out.
Is music your favorite outlet?
It's a tie, I would say, between music and poetry. But it kind of is the same thing. To me, music is just poetry with a melody.
You're working on some original content, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Can we listen to it?
Let's listen to the original song.
I want you to breathe me in. Be the poison. Say shine.
That was hauntingly beautiful. So you wrote the lyrics and you helped compose part of that song?
So I wrote the lyrics to it and I wrote the chord progressions because I had it on the guitar at that time. I came in one day, I'm like, yo, Daniel, I got an idea. Let's do this. And he added some piano into it because he was like, yo, it's going to sound good. And then he added the piano. I was like, oh my God, it sounds good. Put it in. So we're adding like all the background noise and stuff. At a certain point, I want to add more stuff. Daniel's like, nah, it's good. You know, I don't think we should add more. I'm like, fine.
And how do you feel about the final product now?
This is the final version that we just listened to. I only listened to it yesterday, actually. So I was with my boyfriend, and we're just there laying in bed. And I'm like, yo, we should listen to my song. And I play my song, and we're just there in total silence for the entire song. And the song ends, and I get up, and he's like, holy smokes. And I'm just there looking at him, I'm like, I made a song, bro. This is a song. This is my song. Like, I'm just there and I'm thinking like, oh my God, bro. Like, I made it.
What's your ideal future look like?
I feel like there's so many possibilities for me here. I've grown so much as a person, you know, and it's just so many things that I've learned and so many things that I still have to learn. Now I feel proud of myself. You know, and that's a big step. That's a huge step. And I'm just realizing how strong I am. You know, like every day I'm here and I'm just shocked that I'm still alive. Ultimately, though, I do want to have this huge mission where I want to get a doctorate in psychology and become a therapist and do some like huge, intense research on childhood trauma and go back to my mom. Be like, yo, you abused me all my childhood. You know, she's going to be like, no, you're wrong. Where is your doctorate, mother? Where is it? You know, a conversation is just going to end there.
We hope you're inspired by Jessie's story and share it with your friends and family. This podcast is brought to you by Shadowpath Theatre Productions, a not-for-profit charitable theatre company based in York Region, providing accessible theatre to underserved areas. It was produced by T. Nugent, Maisa Basada, and Alex Caroli. Audio production and original music by Cave Audio. Special thanks to 360 Kids. If you haven't heard of them, check them out at 360kids.ca. Their mission is to help youth overcome crisis and transition to a state of safety and stability and ensure every kid has access to a safe home. This podcast was made possible with the support of the City of Richmond Hills Cultural Grant Program.